These days we were on decent terms. Well, when I didn't think too hard about the past. She had moved up in the guild since we'd been together, to the position of attaché to the city, and she helped me with the occasional case I needed guild information from. In exchange, I tried not to resent her new job and new husband. Kara wasn't given to hysterics. If she said emergency, it was.
"Are you coming or not?"
Cherubino asked, literally tapping her foot in impatience. "Yeah," I said distantly. "I'm going to need a phone."
"I need to get to the crime scene before Branson docks me for overtime for the forensics techs. There will be a payphone close by. After you do your reading, mumbo jumbo."
My attention turned back to her. Its highly delicate, trained analysis of what the victim left behind in mind space. Not mumbo jumbo.
"Don't be touchy."
I made a frustrated sound and trotted after her. She was in one of her moods, clearly. Cherubino hustled down the main floor of the DeKalb County Police Department, the secretaries busy in the large pool to the left. The suspects screaming in a long line in front of booking to the right, citizens waiting in front of reception to the front, near the doors she was headed to. The ordered chaos was home. This job, even with all the stress and the budget cuts, was part of what kept me sane and on the wagon. It helped that they refused to give me pay directly, so I had nothing to buy my drug with. "Where's Michael?" I asked. Michael was a wiry Korean guy with a calm personality and a close-cut haircut, a new detective she'd promoted up out of uniforms when he'd helped with a case. He'd proven invaluable, even if he and I had tension sometimes. He was just so nice. I didn't know what to do with nice. Cherubino held the door for me.
"He's getting the car."
In that moment, I got a whiff of impatience along the mental link between us. I'd established a bridge between our minds by accident during an earlier case, and she still wasn't quite comfortable with it. In fact, she wanted it gone as quickly as possible and told me so, often.
"What?"
she asked as I stood there too long. Michael landed the car up to the front of the station with a small squeal of an abused anti-grav system. Cherubino's method of driving must have been wearing off on him. He used to be a great deal safer. Moving quickly to get out of the cold November wind, we piled in the car, Cherubino in the front, me exiled to the back with the fast food wrappers. Cherubino shielded mentally, using the technique I'd shown her to block me out of her mind, long rows of bricks going up between us. But she left one little brick unset, so I could still feel the edge of her presence, like a dim beam of light landing on the floor of my mind. I held on to that light like a lifeline. It hadn't been so long ago that I had felt nothing but her mind over the link. I'd injured my mind in a life-and-death confrontation with a suspect, and it had taken a couple of months to heal fully. That is, if it was, in fact, fully healed. I put my seatbelt on. Michael flipped the sirens on and accelerated. He obeyed most traffic laws most of the time, and had lights and sirens on when he did not. I'd only feared for my life once total when he was driving, and that hadn't been strictly his fault. To distract myself, a pillar of strategy in the 12 steps, I asked Michael, "What do we know about the victim?" He was still connected to his old network as a beat cop. Plus, he had a knack for research and detail that wouldn't quit. If there was something to be known at this stage, he would know it. Also, I added, "Thanks for driving."
"Just a second."
Michael cut through smaller city streets, found a Skylane entrance, an actual official entrance, and squeezed around a car stopped to let him by. He settled into the upper, mostly empty Skylane with plenty of room to spare for the floating anti-grav markers, and only then started to talk.
"Victim is Noah Wright, a 67-year-old white male, unemployed.